Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Good evening, this is Robin Williams with In Conversation, and tonight I'm at University of Technology in Sydney with the Chancellor, Vicky Sara. Professor Sara, is it not?
It is indeed, Robin.
And we're here to look at the most wonderful exhibition from Sweden. Well, most of the theme is from Sweden, about the Nobel Prizes.
Yes, Robin, and it finishes at the end of June, and we've had thousands of schools visiting and we've had thousands of visitors off the street. It's been marvellous.
Where does it go then?
Then it goes to Dubai, and that's its last exhibition. And the next one, which is already in preparation, is going to be totally electronic.
Now, Vicky Sara, as I said, the Chancellor of the University of Technology in Sydney, you were in Sweden yourself for 16 years?
Yeah, for nearly 20 years, actually. So I had the fortune of meeting many of the Nobel Prize winners. I was at the Karolinska Institute, which awards the medicine and physiology. So I met many. And in fact, one of them, and I'll introduce you to her, was my great mentor as I was a young researcher.
Of course, you were working on the brain, weren't you?
Yes, I was. I was working on growth factors, and the woman who influenced me is the last lady before the Nobel dinner, dressed for the dinner to take us in there, and she won the Nobel Prize in 1986 for the discovery of growth factors.
Well, as we walk into a long, open sort of, what would you call this area in the university building?
Well, this is the large walk-through for students from the chancellery at one end. It's as long as two large buildings, and it goes through the main building of the university through to the School of Engineering at the other side. But if we start around this side, is the beginning of the exhibition, which is the 2006 Nobel Prize winners. We've made a special exhibition for the Australian Nobel Prize winners, and you can see them all standing here. There are 11 Australians who have been awarded Nobel Prizes, and per capita, Australia beats the world.
And this is a matter of some argument, I think, as to whether they actually spent that much time here. 11, well, of course, that includes Patrick White for literature.
Yes.
But Prokhorov, I remember Prokhorov, obviously a Russian name. He was born in Atherton in northern Queensland, but he left at the age of 9, surely.
Yes, and we have put the Braggs, who also from Adelaide, as you know, that most of the work was done, I think, in Cambridge. But we have tried to bring out Australian nationals here on this list. We have been very honest in this regard, and we've left out, for example, J.M. Coetzee, who came to Adelaide later on.
Well, J.M. Coetzee for literature, yes.
Yes, but regardless of that, Australians are absolutely the most brilliant people in the world, and you can see that by the awarding of the Nobel laureates.
Well, yeah. I agree with you on Lawrence Bragg, because he did his work very young. I think he graduated at the age of 18 in maths and physics from the University of Adelaide, and he did the work on X-rays only at the age of 22, so you can
yes.
have him.
Oh, thank you, Robin. I'm very glad that we have your approval. And there, of course, you see Peter Doherty, who's giving the Nobel lecture here tomorrow night, and Barry Marshall and Robin Warren. We've had about 8 Nobel Prize winners here giving lectures, and we've had a number of economics prize winners also come through and do seminars for public lectures.
Well, Mac Burnett is another one who's absolutely Australian and regarded as a genius. I remember the editor of Nature put him at number 10 as one of the brightest scientific minds of the century. And next to him's Sir John Cornforth, who was at the University of Sydney and grew up studying chemistry with no hearing at all.
Yes, I know. It's quite amazing, isn't it? I think all of these individuals are just so outstanding. They're such creative individuals. The whole exhibition, it's called Beautiful Minds, and it's Cultures of Creativity. It's not about the Nobel Prize itself, but it's rather about creativity, both individual creativity, using the Nobel laureates as the example, plus how do you develop a culture of creativity? And some of the exhibition actually looks at places like Cambridge, like some of the Zurich labs, CERN, for example, and looks at what kind of a culture and environment do these people work in to attract so many prizes.
Well, before we leave this little part, I remember Lawrence Bragg helped set up a lab in the middle of the Quad in Cambridge in a bike shed. And I think that bike shed produced 10 Nobel Prize winners.
There's something like that. That's right. Well, one of the
very creative bike shed.
Yeah, one of the films that we look at about the cultures of creativity follows a carrot at Cambridge from the farm where it comes from to the dinner table, and tries to give an overview of the type of environment that's required to stimulate innovation and creative thinking. From the National Library, they have lent us some of the items that were recently discovered in the Patrick White archives. These are either copies or models of some of Patrick White's contributions. We've had a series of public events around Patrick White and the Literature Prize.
And there he is, scowling with his beret on. He was such a curmudgeon, wasn't it wonderful? He brought off crossness with such flair.
This is one of the two theatrettes, this one at the entrance of UTS, and you can see we have beautiful minds right across the front here. This one is about individuals, and you'll see there are films about, 20, 30 short films about various Nobel Prize winners through the time. But what I want to show you...
We're going in the dark. Oh, it's a theatrette, yes.
This exhibition has come from the Nobel Museum in Stockholm. But here you see the original, a copy of the original model that Watson and Crick used for DNA. And down here, this is the one I really wanted to show you. The mould that Alexander Fleming used is shown here as a model of it. The original is kept in Stockholm, so there is still the penicillin mould is continued in Stockholm.
How extraordinary. Okay, let's go outside. Obviously, we're in a theatrette with a film showing, but that's where the mould was. I always have mixed feelings about Fleming. It seemed to me that he was certainly a fraud in that he was claiming some of the patients which our own Florey had. Now you're stopping me for something.
Yes, Barry Marshall. Barry Marshall. Now, we know the story of Barry Marshall and Robin Warren and the discovery of the Helobacteria as the cause of ulcers. And this shows the vials that were given to the museum by Barry to put in the case here. And Barry himself actually drank the bacteria and from that showed that it actually caused the duodenal ulcer.
So that's the actual thing from which he gulped it. My gosh. And there's, the cartoon depiction of him doing it.
Yes, exactly.
Back to Fleming, I was saying that he was something of a fraud, because it was in fact the work done by Florey and the gang, Chain, etc. How do you feel about Fleming?
Oh, no, I don't know that he was a fraud. I think Fleming was very creative. There was quite a lot of luck there. He managed to put together a lot of pieces. So I think Fleming is also an innovative and discovery.
All right, compromise position, fine.
These are the 2006 Nobel Prize, physics, chemistry, etc., all the way through here.
George Smoot, I remember meeting George Smoot, Ripples in the Universe. You know, instrument went up and it looked back in time for the first picture, in fact, of the explosion after the Big Bang.
That's right. And only 33 women have received the Nobel Prize. So, girls, it's time to get going.
Well, in fact, let me just check that. It's... I believe there have been 12 for science.
Yes, yes. Science does very well.
So Marie Curie got two. And her daughter got one, so a quarter.
Yeah.
It's a quarter of the science prizes went to one family.
Yes. It's really interesting, isn't it? Really interesting. And some of these, I had the great privilege of meeting Rosalind Yalow, for example, who got the prize in medicine in, I think it was about 76, for the development of radioimmunoassays for measuring hormone levels in blood. And the interesting story that she tells, as many other Nobel Prize winners did, was the difficulty in getting their new ideas accepted and the problems they had and the numbers of rejection letters they had from peer-reviewed journals coming back. So Roz actually wanted to be a physicist, but in those days, of course, it was hard for women to have a career in physics. So she came the back door, in a sense, by getting into laboratory technology. And yes, that's
and
how she came in.
Aung San Suu Kyi for peace.
Yes.
And, of course, there in the front is my own particular heroine, Dorothy Crowfoot Hodgkin.
Yes.
She did enough work to get three.
Exactly. Along here also, some of the these are models again of some of the instrumentations that were developed. This one here, for example, is the monkey mask that Sperry constructed. And the idea of this is to show how many of the laureates were actually kind of like to tinker and build things with their hands. This one coming up here, I think, is the ionising.
Peter Kapitza. Cloud.
Yeah.
Peter Kapitza did the cryophysics, didn't he? Very cold physics.
Yes, that's right. And this is the chamber that he made. And this one here from the ICBL, which is the Ban Landmines organisation, this is the wheelchair that was developed and the leg braces. Mm. So we cover all the Nobel Prizes from peace, economics, chemistry, medicine, physiology, all of them. This is the Alfred Nobel section of the exhibition, and you can see this is his will that was written and his death mask and the various books that he had from his library. When he died, all his companies that were shown across here, and he did in fact have a company apparently in Sydney, they were all sold and put into the fund. And from that, of course, the interest from that, the Nobel Prizes, which are worth about $1.3 million.
This is a fabulous section, isn't it? Mm. Because you've got the original books and some of the instruments, but his death mask itself just lying there, rather a slimmer face than you normally see, and his straggly beard, eyes shut. It's just very moving.
Yeah. It's quite an extensive exhibition. This is such a marvellous building at UTS, the Tower Building. It's perfect for this space. And we were able to be extremely flexible and find the space because I think we're totally committed to exhibitions like this. Here's Barbara McClintock, as you see, but I want to introduce
Jumping jeans lady to a
very special lady who's still alive, and this is Rita Levi-Montalcini, who was a mentor to me. She's, I think, one of the oldest living laureates at the moment. She's in her 90s. She has been made a senator of the Roman Senate by the government.
She lives in Rome?
Yes, that's right.
She looks so elegant, doesn't she?
Yes, I was at that dinner and it was just such an exciting evening.
What did she teach you, actually?
I worked in the growth factor area and Rita was one of the pioneers in that area. What she taught me was really to be really bloody-minded about your research. Rita is a Jew who was hidden in a garage during the Second World War and built a small laboratory in that garage that she could work on. And when the war was over, she went over to the United States and developed that further. But she continued her work regardless of the circumstances of the time.
Amazing.
Amazing.
The makes up to some extent, I suppose, for Lisa Meitner, who also worked during the war, was the genius, the physics genius behind nuclear ideas, and she was diddled out of it scandalously, wasn't she?
Yes. And in this theatreette here, we have what makes a creative milieu. And there are films taken from Cold Spring Harbour, there's one on Niels Bohr from Denmark, and Cambridge and Basel Institute. Now, this one, I think, is Niels Bohr, if I remember correctly.
Niels Bohr seen most recently in the Michael Frayn play, Copenhagen.
Yeah, which was a wonderful play. It was excellent.
It's a remarkable video, isn't it? It's three in three sections on the screen, and you've got his voice, you've got his writing, you've got his face, and there we are, presumably, in Denmark.
Yes, yeah. They're trying to build a picture of the times as well as the organisation where they were working. So I guess it's looking at, is there something special in the environment or at the time that you're living that encourages this to happen? Or is it just accidental? Or is it the coming together of a couple of very creative minds?
What do you think?
I think it's all of those. I mean, I don't think it's that simple, but I think this is something really important for research institutes and governments which fund research to understand that what they've got to do is ensure that we have a lot of creative people with the freedom to be able to innovate and think outside the square.
Yeah, you need a critical mass of bright brains, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And most of the institutes where there is a concentration of Nobel Prizes, like in the Karolinska where I was, or in CERN, or at Woods Hole, or some of the other institutes in the States, Rockefeller, for example, this is what makes it so exciting to be there.
And as bike shed in Cambridge.
Yeah, the bike shed in Cambridge. Yeah,
as a student, yeah, you were saying?
As a student, I mean, there is nothing so exciting as working in that environment. And I guess in the universities, what we try to do is create that as best we can.
I must say that I'm completely bowled over by the scale of this, the intimacy and the flair. Yes. It's not just a bunch of real objects and pictures and videos, but the whole thing is as a work of art.
Well, it's very professionally done. The Nobel Museum in Stockholm sent a team of curators out here for 2 weeks before it was established. We also have our own creator, who is in fact one of our professors from the Faculty of Design. But the Swedes have put so much into the detail, the lighting, everything in this space. And the space does very well in this.
It does, certainly.
Now, what we're looking at here, we have each of these columns represents a decade in the history of the Nobel Prize, because the whole exhibition celebrates the centennial of the Nobel Prize. And so what they're looking at is not just who was awarded the prize, and you'll see in this one from 1900 to 1910, where Kipling actually received it in literature, but what kind of controversy surrounded the awarding of the prize, what was happening in the world at that particular time.
Kipling, of course, wrote about Mowgli in the Jungle Book, and you've got one of the Jungle Books up there.
Yes, and this is 11 to 20, the Red Cross. The Red Cross, I believe, has actually received 3 Nobel Prizes for peace. Over here, what looks like a gigantic dry cleaning rack.
With each of the...
I don't know how to describe that.
Well, it's got each of the Nobel Prize winners going round on a kind of pulley system. There's Anatole France, Max Planck, and... who's coming around? Enrico Fermi, another nuclear physicist, the Italian from Chicago.
Yes, and they all drop down. So if you can wait long enough, which is probably about 24 hours, you'll see all of the 800 of the Nobel laureates. And here we're going to the 20s to the 30s.
Insulin from Canada.
That's right, Banting. And you can see the syringe and the packaging for the original insulin that was extracted from, I think it was a dog pancreas for insulin.
Oh, right.
Einstein, of course, for physics in this year.
And MacLeod, the famous duo, did they fight?
Yeah. And this is interesting. Of course, the Peace Prize was awarded to Ossetsky, and he was not allowed to accept it. This was during 31 to 40, the beginning of the war. He's a German who tried to really ensure that peace was coming through Europe. He wrote a lot of these books that were circulated, had a campaign against Nazism. He was actually awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. He was not allowed out of Germany to accept it.
It's interesting that after 1940, you had this tremendous hiatus when Germany did not win until like the 70s or 80s.
Yes. Yes, that's right. That's absolutely right.
On to 41 to 50.
And here we have Fleming's moles, penicillin again. Fleming, Florey and Chain received the Nobel Prize. And again, we're looking at the environment around this time, which was still the period of the Second World War and the Cold War.
51 to 60.
Pasternak
for literature.
And transistors, of course, also, Shockley. They received the Nobel Prize in Physics for this time. And you just see the type of response in the press of the time for this. For example, I think 61 to 70, of course, the Nobel Prize has not always been accepted when it's been offered. And Jean-Paul Sartre refused it. He turned it down. And this shows the press clippings of the time.
Did he give his reasons for turning it down?
He felt it would interfere with his creativity. Oh. That the responsibility of it would take over from his freedom to create and spend time on his own creativity.
I suppose Peter Doherty would agree, the number of speeches he's had to make since.
I think that's quite so. He was asked later on, I think, did he ever regret not accepting the Nobel Prize in Literature? And he said he didn't regret that. He regretted the money, however.
I know. Before we go on, Pasternak, of course, for Dr. Zhivago, that was a political thing in some respects. There was dispute about whether he was actually at the level required. Of course, the Russians were very cross about it. And Shockley, one of the transistor people, along with Bardeen, who got two Nobel Prizes, Shockley was taken by many people as a villain, wasn't he? A really nasty man.
Yes. I don't know the full story about that, Robin. The museum is putting it more in a... No. It's a very, very well-spread outline. And this one, 71 to 80, this is the Peace Prize, of course, was very controversial, going to Kissinger.
I must say that when Kissinger got the Nobel Prize, Tom Lehrer, the satirical songwriter, said when that happened, it was the end of satire and he stopped composing.
Yes, I do recall that one.
he was so distraught. Yeah. 81 to 90.
And here we're looking at, this was the time, of course, when Mikhail Gorbachev received the Peace Prize, and there's a piece of the Berlin Wall that is standing there.
It's interesting, it's covered in sort of green lichen and looks like lichen. And some sort of reddish crystalline material.
Yes, yeah.
Very pretty.
Yes, it is, isn't it? Amazing that such a pretty object could have such a horrible history. Then 90s,
right.
The 90s, of course, we're moving to prions, if you remember this, of course.
Stanley Prusner, I interviewed him at the Garvan Institute here in Sydney when I came across the prions. Yeah. Linked to mad cow disease and also maybe to other diseases.
Yes.
Slightly controversial again.
Yes, still controversial, I think you'd say. Transistors again. The laser diodes were discovered. Now we move on to another section of the exhibition, and these are models of the foundations or organisations that actually have the responsibility of awarding the prizes. So you can see the model of the Swedish Academy, which gives physics, chemistry and economics.
Yes, in fact, I was there, and you're surrounded in the main area by portraits of blokes with beards.
That's right.
And I told them that they hadn't had an Australian, this is way back, for umpteen years, and would they please fix it? And of course, the rest is history.
Of course. So you were behind it. Here, now, this is my favourite. This is the Karolinska Institute, where I worked for many years. And this, of course, is the round table. 50 people sit around and decide, the Nobel Committee. Medicine and physiology comes from here, the academy over there. And that brings us really to the end of the exhibition.
And one wonders in that round table there whether sometime, maybe in September, October, someone might say the name Elizabeth Blackburn?
I would certainly hope so.
Tasmania and Melbourne, and a person associated with telomeres, which are involved in the genetics of the cell. Come over here before we say farewell to the exhibition. I must say, it's so extraordinary that in some ways it's a pity that it's not going to go elsewhere in Australia.
Yes, I know. We've asked the museum if we can keep part of it here, but it still has, I think, two places to go before it's stored, and we will endeavour to keep part of the museum here at UTS because it is very exciting.
The final question, Vicky Sara, Chancellor of the University of Technology in Sydney. Given that it comes from a northern European country of only about 7 or 8 million, how come Sweden yet again has captured the imagination with something like a Nobel Prize?
Because of the creative environment that is in Stockholm and in the rest of Sweden. And that's why I think this exhibition is so important to come to Australia. We have to learn and we have to build the best environment we can. We have some of the brightest young people here in Australia, and we want to ensure that we give them the best opportunity to become the next decade's Nobel laureates.
I was touring the utterly superb Nobel Prize exhibition at the University of Technology in Sydney. It's open until June the 30th. And if you're in the city, just off Broadway, do go to see it. It's free and it's huge. Our guide was the University Chancellor, Professor Vicky Sara. Next week, a tribute to another great Australian, George Seddon, the Professor of Everything. I'm Robin Williams.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.